Thanks for downloading this episode of the Simcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching for the Simcast wherever they get their podcasts. The Simcast on RS1.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Simcast, your weekly source for occasional sim racing news, but mostly tomfoolery. And that's the way we like it. It is episode one of our 2023 season. We're back! We are back. I hope everyone had a lovely holiday season. Nice, safe time was had by all. Some things have happened while we were away. So we have a very packed show this evening. But before we get started, we have some special guests. Mr. Satterley, Mr. Lewis, will be joining us shortly. I am, of course, Mr. Ben Williams, the usual U.S. host. We didn't change the locks, so Mr. Jordan Groves is still here.
Hi.
It's like a bad penny, that dude.
One night only.
One night only. Anyway, and joining us as a Simcast regular, Mr. Taylor Burris.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me on, and looking forward to this amazing opportunity to working with you guys.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. So, Taylor, you were on the show back in, I'm going to say 2020, when I talked to you and the guys from Podium Esports. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So, just briefly, we are an only an hour show. Just tell everyone, like, where did you come from? Where did you go? All that kind of fun things.
Where'd I come from, Cotton Eye Joe, huh?
I was hoping someone would pick that up.
I got you on that. Yeah, so a little background. I've been involved around with motor racing for pretty much a majority of my life. My family's been involved with the NASCAR industry racing since all the way back to the 1940s and 50s with my great-grandfather. My dad and my grandfather were members of the WKA, which is the World Karting Association. And for me, I got involved with esports competition around 2013 with iRacing. Working my way through, I was able to have the opportunity to get involved with esports commentary work, working with companies such as the Global Sim Racing Channel, Podium Esports, RaceSpot TV, before getting my first opportunity in real-world broadcasting with the SCCA, Sports Car Club of America, for those of you who are not in the United States. Working with them, doing the runoffs, as well as the Hoosier Super Tour series, and then progressing on to other forms of racing, such as, for a fact, for 2022 and into this year for 2023, covering the Supercarts USA, as well as also other nationally recognized karting series across the United States with kart chasers. In fact, this past weekend, we were in Homestead for their winter tour. This weekend on, of course, the weekend leading up to the 19th, 20th, and 21st of January, we're going to be heading down to St. Petersburg in the Tropicana Field down in Florida for the Florida Winter Tour for the Rock Cup USA series.
So what you're saying is you are the highest qualified person on this show right now.
I would not say so, but I mean, we're all here to have fun. The thing is, we talk about all things sim racing, and that's one of my passions. It's something that I've been involved with for a long time, and you know, it's always good to be working with a bunch of other people to talk about something that we all love, which is sim racing and motorsports.
Yes, and we do that around here occasionally. Of course, just before we get into the meat of the material this evening, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Simcast Radio. Tell us what you're thinking about the show using the hashtag SimcastRSL. And myself, Lewis, Matt, and I believe Taylor as well, are all members of the Midweek Motorsports Listeners Collective on Facebook. So, new year. We're going to do things a little bit different, mainly because this is the biggest story that we have to talk about. It's time for the Esports Roundup of the Week, brought to you by The Gaming Athlete. Head on over to thegamingathletes.com to learn more about how to reach athlete status in gaming by maximizing your performance and restoring your well-being. Once again, that's thegamingathlete.com. So, full admission, I was expecting, if I don't have Lewis to do the little jingle that he does. Sometimes I forget what to say next. Anyway, so obviously we're going to spend most of tonight's program talking about the Le Mans Virtual. We actually have a special guest here just to talk to us about that. Joining us from Satellite Racing, a return. This is the third time you've been on the show now, Matt?
Yes.
Yes. And you'll have to correct me if I pronounce your name wrong, Mr. Matt Strad?
Strand.
Okay. I should have gone by second guess. So welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back to talk with us about this.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I think it's cool that Taylor is here too, because he's called a bunch of our SCCA races.
So, Satellite Racing, obviously you guys took part in this event.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, can you tell us a little about your experience with like your end of the spectrum? Because by now, most people are kind of familiar with what happened during the race. So I want to hear your firsthand, what happened firsthand from you.
Well, to start off, the red flags were obviously unfortunate. Mm-hmm. I think what's going around currently, though, is way blown out of proportion, mostly because a certain man-child decided to go on a rant on a stream. And
I have to admit, it's not every day that I agree with Max Verstappen, which was an odd thing to feel, but it's not to say that I didn't think he had a point. Please continue.
Well, he does and he doesn't. It's the event as a whole, that issue was unfortunate, and the security breach thing was kind of sad and ridiculous at this point in the world. Mm-hmm. But as far everyone's blaming the game and this platform, this, that, and the other, we've been in R Factor iRacing ACC. We run across all of them. We haven't had issues like this with R Factor since, I want to say, 2019, really. Mm-hmm. The 2020 event, they had problems, but then the leagues that we run in, they went and brought the guy that runs the servers from those leagues, they went and brought him in after, and it's been kind of seamless ever since. So we haven't had any issues running the regular season. We didn't have any issues running the 24-hour last year. Mm-hmm. A couple people had individual issues, but that's normally from their own connection setup, generally speaking. What happened this year, it's unfortunate, and I understand it was from a few streamers, basically, that the information got leaked. But I can't say I'm blaming the platform. It's not a clown show, as he went on to call it. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Yerny Simicic put a video out right after saying real racers don't quit. And he quit. So that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, there is something that I've talked about briefly on the show before is that sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect between competing for the win and competing for the love of competing. And whenever you get into high stress situations like that, it's kind of obvious where you fall on the end of that spectrum. Obviously, I'm fortunate that his race ended that way. And so I can understand his little outburst. But at the same time, whenever the ACC event, the 24 Hours of Spa, that had similar issues, the people who run those type of leagues and run those type of servers took steps to protect against it. But apparently, the URL or the IP address, make sure I use my terms correctly, the IP address for the Le Mans virtual server was publicly available on Steam if you know where to look. Which I understand that sometimes bad things happen whenever you're leaking information on stream. But at the same time, if you knew it would work, you could find it. Does anyone else want to chime in with their thoughts about this whole situation?
I may have a thought about this. I mean, honestly, like Matt pointed out, with other forms of esports and sim racing, they all have their blunders. You know, we think of iRacing having issues maybe with connectivity, even a Assetto Corsa and R-Factor. We've seen it all happen across all different platforms. I think the biggest problem of why so many people are giving so much publicity on this, and unfortunately, yes, it's bad publicity, but it's still publicity for this series, is that so many big name drivers and teams and manufacturers were involved with something like this. I mean, I remember not too long ago with iRacing having a big issue with their quote unquote 24 Hours of France over there several years ago. And it caused a big stink. So it's just a mix of, unfortunately, how servers and how internet connections. And I have to say also, people need to start, you know, understanding that this is a special event that people maybe need not to hop in, which I understand why people may want to hop into those servers to watch, because maybe the broadcasted event may not cover certain things that you want to watch. But still, that's where the streamers who are streaming their races can really come into play.
Yeah. One of the biggest takeaways from this is that we're probably going to see an end of streamers being allowed to stream their POV to eliminate potential issues in the future. Something that most people have kind of characterized Motorsport Games' response to this is that they've been deflecting blame from themselves left, right, and center, just kind of like trying to make people look the other direction while they don't take fault in what happened.
Well, let's just say Motorsport Games is having to do a lot of deflecting.
Oh, yeah, I thought we'll get to it. We will get to that. Jordan, you've been very quiet.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I think the other thing that we have to add on to the reason why this has caused so much of a stir is that Motorsport Games aren't exactly popular at the moment for a number of reasons.
That's a fair assessment, I would say.
That might be a contender for understatement of the year, and we're already on the first show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so obviously the developer is unpopular, and that's causing a lot of this. And, you know, there is a general, like, there is a feeling amongst people that use this sim quite often that these problems aren't new and have been around for long enough that you would have thought that either Studio 397 would have dealt with them when they weren't owned by Motorsport Games, or Motorsport Games would have helped in drive those kind of improvements with the amount of funding that they're bringing in and with the amount of exclusive licenses they're bringing in and therefore the amount of attention they're bringing in. I think the real shame of all of this is that, you know, the Le Mans Virtual for the last 3 years has had the opportunity to be one of the best showcases of how sim racing has evolved and what it can do, especially during the off season when nothing else is happening and people need entertainment. You know, it's a great concept for an event. However, this year in particular, you know, we haven't even mentioned who's won. Every single piece of dialogue in the wake of this race has been about how it wasn't great. Whether that's justified criticism or not, I happen to think it is, personally, because so many balls have been dropped. It's mad.
Having an exclusive event with two red flags and many hours of not race. Well, it was, what, 2 hours total of not racing? To be fair, Matt?
It was a little over 2 hours.
Okay.
But then you've got, like, again, to link back to what I said at the start, you know, there's a lot of ill feeling toward Motorsport Games, particularly when it comes to the Le Mans license, because we've gone from having the ability to have a Le Mans 24 hour being hosted on other servers, not just iRacing, or other services, I should say, to an event that's invite only. So already nobody, like the vast majority of people, can't take part, and then there's no alternative if that very exclusive event is then not great. So yeah, it's I think I, it's it's not just that there were glitches and there were people being kicked out or that Max Verstappen kicked off. It's such a conglomeration of different factors as to why this has blown up so much. And it is a massive shame because, like I said, this event had the potential to really do a lot of good for sim racing. And sadly, it can't have done much worse for sim racing, in my view.
Mm-hmm.
I have a point to that, though.
Go on.
So, it took the official race away from iRacing, but in my team's case in particular, we ran 3 24 hours of Le Mans on iRacing last year. They didn't take the track away. They didn't take the cars away. There's still plenty of leagues that run it. The majors had, I want to say, 6 splits or something like that of people. The event is still there. It's just not an official name under iRacing's special events calendar. And everyone's saying, oh, they took this event from us. No, they didn't. They just added, you have to go to a league and do it. So you have to take one extra step. That's all.
And also, if I can point in, Matt, as well, there was also last year, as well, the 24-hour series where it was utilizing the prototypes, the GTE cars, at 4 distinct 24-hour tracks. And that kind of also helped us out to where we could have that in an official capacity, just without that official quote-unquote name.
Yeah.
It was do we believe, though, that there is going to be the potential for Le Mans to be added to any new games in future? Or is it just being allowed on iRacing to continue in a slightly altered way because they already have it? Like, are we really going to see it in any other sim now because the license belongs to Motorsport Games?
Yeah, that has been a concern for many people, is that you still have it on, like, all of the Assetto Corsa mods are unofficial, so you need to worry about that. The iRacing probably still has like a standing license with the ACO to keep that track on their service. But, you know, with new titles that will be coming out, maybe Forza Motorsport, whenever that comes out this spring, if that happens, that's apparently we're going to find that out on next...
Wednesday?
Next Wednesday, we'll find that out, yeah.
And you think about it, Forza is a big partner when it comes to that event at Le Mans.
Yes, there was an entire like back wall that was plastered with Forza Motorsport 7 logos at one point. But
they ran the official Le Mans series before it was in our factory.
Indeed. Oh, yeah. Indeed. Oh, yeah. So many Toro races took part in that. anyway, I was... You know, only slightly salty that they didn't come to the largest community league to help run that. But anyway, so maybe whenever that game releases, we'll start to see, like, can you still get a license for the Le Mans track as a whole? Or is it going to be like, is Forza going to create a version of it that's free of copyright, kind of like they did with Sunset Peninsula Raceway when they didn't have the Daytona license?
I guess it's going to come down to how the ACO did their contract, because obviously we know IndyCar did the exclusive contract, but at the same time, they have, I think Motorsport has that NASCAR game that came out, but iRacing is still hosting the, quote, official NASCAR mm-hmm. esports series, so yeah. It's going to come down to each entity basically and how good their negotiating is, whether they get exclusive or not.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this later, but the IndyCar Motorsport Games license isn't actually an exclusive license. It specifies in their agreement that it is a non-exclusive license, and that IndyCar has the ability to put their cars in other titles,
and which chose not to do that. But yeah, that's a whole other kettle of fish.
That is a whole
wait 5 minutes.
Depends on a lot of things that Motorsports Games is able to accomplish between now and the future.
Yeah. Before we continue, though, I think we do need to shout out the winners of this event.
Well, I would say the LMP2 winners were from Team Redline with Felipe Drugovic, Felix Rosenquist, Luke Bennett, and Chris Lullum were your winners with the Le Mans Virtual at Le Mans. The GTE winners is, of course, the 888 of RHE Esports Ferrari, of course, of Alexander Sommelier, Scott Andrews, Timoche Andavosky, and Aaron Javosky as well for those two classes. And I believe the champions were also crowned this weekend or this past weekend with the Le Mans Virtual Championship Series.
Yes. The LMP2 champions being the number 20 Porsche Cadona car driven by the likes of Josh Rogers and Mitchell Jajon, people that we've mentioned several times on this program. In the GTE category, we had the number 71 BMW Team Redline car driven by some guy named Rudy Van Buren, I believe is a former F1 esports champion. Correct me if I'm wrong.
He is. World's fastest gamer.
Oh, yes, of course, world's fastest gamer. Kevin Sigley, Enzo Benito, and Lorenzo Colombo.
Very respected teams. Of course, two of the biggest manufacturers in esports competition, with Sim Racing taking home those championships of Porsche, Coandas Esports, and the BMW Team Redline.
Yes.
We could all be so lucky.
Final thoughts on this before we move on, gentlemen.
Real racers don't quit.
That, of course, I have to say a big round of applause for all the drivers who were able to finish. But for the FIA and ACO, Motorsports Game, and R-Factor, I think now is a time to look over everything, to see what they can do to improve upon what they're trying to do. Because, I mean, unfortunately, they have a mass audience in the esports and sim racing community who have mixed reviews. Because even I was catching some of the comments. You had two different sides. You had people who were supporting the R-Factor brand, and then people who were absolutely just decimating their thoughts on what they think on R-Factor. So it's going to be a lot of work, and I have to say, given the fact of how, like what we're touching on here, basically R-Factor has got a lot of work to do. Motorsports Games has got a lot of work to do between now and the next time this event rolls around.
Most definitely. Matt and Jordan, well, actually, Matt already gave us his final thought. Jordan, any final thoughts?
Mainly what Taylor said. You know, they've not only got a lot of work to do to make sure that this event, if it happens again in future, goes well, but also to try and win back some of the people that are extremely irritated right now. So,
yes.
And I think that there are a lot of reasons to be upset with some of the parties involved. I think most of it, again, comes down to Motorsport Games. There is, like with the next story we're going to cover, there are some things that are being blamed at them and it's not actually their fault, you know. It's just a very tricky situation, and I think the next 12 months could change rapidly. I mean, let's not beat around the bush and say that Motorsport Games aren't in a little bit of strife right now.
Mm-hmm.
Who's to say where any licenses will be with companies that may or may not exist by then? Like, you know, purely speculation, but I mean, I wouldn't say that's unwarranted speculation.
We will unpack that in a second. But before we do, we have another fun interview on tonight's program. I sat down with one of our friends of the show, Ash Vandelay, to talk about a eSport competition for female drivers. So welcome back to the Simcast, motorsport content extraordinaire, and newly minted zebra, Ash Vandelay.
I like being on this podcast. I feel like I've been here. It feels like home. I've been here a lot. So yeah. I appreciate you guys having me.
Yes, we always love having guests on our program. So how are you this evening?
Good, just trucking along some stuff. Daytona 24 coming up, so prepping the schedule, like literally as we're talking, trying to get out of the 4 a.m. split, but someone's going to do it. So I guess it's going to be me.
And you're going to the real 24 as well.
Yes. I'll be doing that with my PS Plus competition recent joining and in conjunction with Turner Motorsports, so that should be super cool.
Yes, I'm only minorly jealous of you. Anyway, so what can you tell me about Screen to Speed?
So thank you for mentioning it. Screen to Speed is essentially attempting to create a pipeline to bring more women into motorsports, starting with sim racing, essentially. And it's going to be not just this event. It's going to be many more events. It's going to be a whole project, essentially, starting with Screen to Speed, essentially. We're trying to create an authentic program. This program was also created by women. So all the women running it, all the brains behind the operations are women. So I think that's super great because it just shows the pipeline of women managing not only sim racing and Kelly Moss and Penzoil, who are bringing this all into fruition for us and in its esports, but also all the fellow racers in it are women who have been super speedy. I thought they would kind of be like me, kind of stuck in the high 50s of this track that we're doing, which is Las Vegas in the next gen. However, they are super quick. So yeah, the whole idea is to hopefully bring the top 20 to Vegas for an IRL event, which is going to be really cool. It's going to be streamed. And then the winner gets $15,000 as well as a live Porsche track day with Kelly Moss and VIP passes to Kelly Moss IMSA race, full hospitality, and just a bunch of other really cool prizes and winning things.
Is there a particular place where if female racers aren't interested, they need to register to take part in this program?
Yes. If you just go to screen2speed.com, you can find all that information. You can also register as like a spectator / ally of the event, and you can also win prizes as well, which is tickets to NASCAR race, next level racing simulator, also VIP hospitality at Kelly Moss Racing, and a Screen to Speed jersey.
Very cool. So how did you get involved in this? Did Kelly Moss Racing reach out to you particularly, or did you just say, hey, I can help?
I wish Kelly Moss Racing would reach out to me. If you're listening to this podcast, I'm available for whatever your needs are. Someone I've been working with in iRacing, Angela, shout out. We were talking about essentially how I really wanted to do some kind of women in motorsports for in iRacing, like an event. And she's like, hold on to that thought. Eventually contacted me about Screen to Speed. And I was like, this is awesome. So join their Discord. Joined Screen to Speed's Discord, registered for it right away. Started doing a little bit of track practice recently. I realized I need to do that a lot more, but I'll do that after Daytona. Just be doing that course because a lot of the racers have been, they're doing like low 49s. I don't know how they're doing it. I think even a 48, it's ridiculous. But in ridiculous, I mean impressive. Yes. So yeah, this is a huge conjunction with Penzoil, iRacing, and Kelly Moss and Innit Esports, which is really cool that it's such huge companies are kind of backing this initiative and realizing how important it is.
Oh yeah, totally. It's always good to see ways of less traditional, I think I can say that safely, less traditional race car drivers to get more opportunities to get into the sport.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think, and maybe, look, Ben, maybe this is controversial and everyone can angrily comment on your podcast comments and let me know that I'm a doofus in my Twitter DMs. But there are so many times where men bring other men up or help other men reach a certain point in their career. And it's been, and a lot of motorsports is a goal boys club. So I don't understand how some people can be against when women do the same exact thing when men have been doing it for so long.
Yeah.
So this event is just helping promote other women. And these women racers, they're each going to have a profile. They're going to be interviewed. They're all going to be, when they're in Vegas, the top 20 racers, they're all going to be broadcasted, be able to talk about their story, how they got into motorsports. And if they don't want to become a racer, there's opportunities for them to make connections to be a broadcaster, a commentator, and just other parts of the industry. So helping them make those connections that otherwise they wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see more of these opportunities open up. So you said that this isn't going to be a one-off event, that this is going to eventually be like a whole series of events?
I don't know a whole series of events, but it's definitely a long-term initiative. Right now we're starting with Screen to Speed, showing, I guess, proof of concept essentially, and getting all this backing from, again, Penzoil, Kelly Moss, iRacing, et cetera. And showing that there is plenty of talent in the pipeline. They just need to be given a chance to be shown, talked about, and given an opportunity to sim race in front of a large audience.
All right.
Also, who doesn't want to race a Porsche with Kelly Moss racing?
This is true.
Yeah. I don't know if I should be allowed in it if I were to get the opportunity. Also, Kelly Moss, if you hear that, don't actually take that seriously. I'm just making a nice little joke, but. I feel like the iRacing when I lose control is going to be a little bit different when that happens IRL. So it's a very cool experience, and whoever gets to do it is going to be super lucky.
Awesome. And where can people follow you if they want to see more of your content?
Oh, shucks, Ben. Thank you for letting me plug myself in. It's
of course.
Everything's under one name: YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Twitch. What else do I do? There's so many of them. It's all under Ash Vandelay, spelled AshVandelay.
All right. Thank you again for coming on the podcast. We'll have to have you come back whenever more of these initiatives start to grow and see how things turn out.
I hope one day I'll just be able to take a full podcast episode with all the initiatives that are happening with women in motorsports. So we'll gladly do it. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun whenever we do that episode. Thanks for coming to talk to me, Ash. Always great to have you on the program. While we were gone, dear listener, Mr. Louis Satterley has joined us.
Yay! The computer has decided not to hate me anymore.
Yay! Did you finally feed the hamster that runs your PC?
It's been fed. It's been watered. That's probably why it wasn't working, because it's been watered.
Yeah, electronics and water, never a good thing.
Never a good idea. That's why I never understood water-cooled computers.
Technically, anyway, we're not going to get into that. So, Louis, the only thing you have missed is the Le Mans virtual. Do you have any brief comments that you want to add to the good of the order?
Overall, I did enjoy the race as a whole. The red flags obviously were a big hamper, which I know Matt was frustrated with that. And good job, Matt. I don't know if I ever did congratulate you guys on that.
I appreciate it. You know, not bad for a 6-minute penalty to start the race off.
Not bad at all. And whose idea was it, by the way, to throw in reading a book on how to go faster?
That was 100% Nello.
Okay, because every commentator in all the comments just exploded whenever they saw that.
So. That was 100% Nello, and we are sponsored by Moradness. Dan Morad was supposed to be in the car with us. Had a testing conflict, so that's why Nello got in the car. But gotcha. he is kind of like our clothing provider. So I hit him up right after with a Twitch clip, like, "Hey, we need to make this a shirt somehow."
Oh goodness!
Yes, but anyway, now that we've filled half the show talking about esports roundup of the week, let's get into some sim racing news. Like I said at the top of the show, a lot has happened. So some of this is going to be pretty rapid fire. Some of this, we're actually going to spend some time talking about it, particularly this first one. So Motorsport Games. We've already kind of alluded to this in the program. Motorsport Games has been having some issues with their developers. And by issues with their developers, I mean they're not paying them, apparently. According to an article that I found on Insider Gaming, there has been the developers that have been working on the NASCAR game that were based in Russia have now moved to Georgia, and it's not clear when you read the article if that's the state of or the country of Georgia.
It's the country.
It is the country. Is it officially the country?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So they basically, because of the whole ongoing war with Ukraine, basically told their developers that, hey, we need you to move to Georgia so we can keep paying you.
By the way, you have to find your own way to get there.
Oh yeah, there's that too.
We're not paying for that.
Yeah. So, since then, they haven't really been paying their employees. Of course, Motorsport Games has not wanted to comment on this, nor have they commented on this as of time of recording. They probably never will. And this was reported back like the 6th of January. Fast forward to Monday, the same website has now reporting that these developers are now threatening to leak the source code for 4 of Motorsport Games' titles in order to basically say, pay us or this happens.
A blackmail. Good old fashioned blackmail.
Yes, effectively. The four games in question are NASCAR 21 Ignition. Not sure why anyone would want the code for that game anyway. NASCAR Heat 5, KartKraft, and the upcoming IndyCar game. The employee in question who is making these demands are saying that if unpaid wages are paid to the employees by January 25th, the source code for these games will not go online.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So we've talked a lot about how Motorsport Games has had some issues as a company over the last 2 years, I guess, of their existence. Stories about their entire board of directors walking out back in, was that December or was that November? I can't remember now.
November, I think.
Yeah. A couple other things like misleading. Misleading investors. Completely lost the word for investors there. About how they're going to be spending their money. Other things along those lines. What are people's comments about this?
A sigh, and admittedly, from some fairly recent research that I was doing, I'm glad to know that Studio 397 and R Factor 2, they're basically self-sustaining, and the only thing that Motorsports Games gets out of it apparently is the profit that they make.
Okay.
I'm with you. Studio 397 remains my main concern.
Yes.
In all this.
Yeah, which
I think I share everyone's concerns in, like, when or if or when, I'll be political about this, if or when Motorsport Games cease to exist and Studio 397 is just kind of out there in the wind, were they going to be picked up by the likes of Codemasters and EA or another?
Well, I hope that's not the case, because then they'll just be shut down if Codemasters and EA get a hold of it.
Yeah, there was that.
What I'm wondering, though, is ever since MSG moved in, a lot of the Studio 397 guys have kind of gotten sick of it and left. So what's going to be left of them, just assuming they do eventually split again, what's actually going to be left of them that still survive?
That is also a very good point.
That is a very valid point. But I've already stated the point that I made, but just to reiterate on it, is that doing some research on the whole, basically it all stemmed off of the debacle that happened with basically the backlash that Verstappen had and his whole rant about it and people's agreeing opinions on him. Went through thorough research just trying to find if there actually is an exclusive deal with the ACO and Motorsport Games, which there isn't, but that's a whole nother thing. But finding out that literally Studio 397 is basically left alone to do their own thing, except for apparently it's not so much that, if, as Matt said, that they're getting frustrated to the point where they're leaving anyway. So that tells me it's a management issue. So,
yeah.
But hopefully not too many more leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think
my understanding, they're allowed. Sorry.
No, go after you.
I was just going to say, from my understanding, they're allowed to kind of do their own thing and get their own licenses if they can, but they're really not. So MSG is like, they're getting a lot of the WEC licenses right now because of the Le Mans Virtual Series, and they're bringing that to them like, hey, we need you to make this, and they're so tied up doing that, they can't actually do their own thing right now. That's what I've heard.
So that's what the frustration really is that they can't do their own thing effectively.
It's micromanagement, roundabout way of saying.
Yeah, that never works out for anything, ever.
No, it doesn't. Jordan, what point were you going to make?
Somewhat similar, yeah. I mean, I think the glimmer of hope there that Lewis said is that, you know, if MSG were to go under, there is the potential that RF2 could still survive in some regards, so long as they're able to still keep on enough staff to keep it going over. The fact that they are independent in that sense, at least there's a glimmer of hope there. And I do think that even if push came to shove, I do think another developer, be it one that's already in the sim racing space or be it one that isn't, might pick them up, because there is R Factor 2, there is still a significant market share there. You know, it's one of the bigger sims on the market for a reason. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been around for ages and it is admittedly finicky.
Yes.
But when it's working, it's phenomenal. So I mean, there's 100% a desire there, I feel, amongst fans and potentially amongst potential investors if stuff goes south.
Yeah.
But
well, what are the odds that they end up doing what they were before they were bought out by Motorsport Games, where they're just their own entity again?
Yeah.
And then they can go back to doing their own thing the way that they want to.
I think we need a lawyer to figure out how that aspect would work.
That would be good, but then my only worry would be that there are a portion of people that have gotten into R Factor 2 through the licenses that MSG has been able to afford them. You know, like such as Formula E and the British Touring Car stuff, and obviously the Virtual Le Mans stuff. You know, there's a lot of licenses there that potentially, I'm not sure what split is, ones they've attracted before MSG got involved, but ones that came after. But I know British Touring Car and IndyCar, for example, came as a result of that partnership. So the one thing I would worry about is if they went their own ways again, whether that content would A, be allowed to remain, and B, whether that content would then continue, whether R Factor would then be able to do deals with those series themselves.
Well, the content obviously would have to stay because you've paid for it, or we've paid for it.
Okay, yeah, so I'll rephrase.
Our ability and what capacity we're able to use that said content would be dictated. Yeah.
And then, of course, like with regards to British Touring Car, we know that that content's going to be evolving over the course of this year to bring it in line with the new regulations, for example. If, say, tomorrow this deal was to go, you know, would that be the end of that content? And it would be a shame if it was. So what I'm saying is that I'd be worried that the potential of more recent fans to R Factor 2, myself included, really, that have been drawn to it because of some of the licenses it's been able to get, might that diminish? That would be my worry, but yeah.
I don't think they brought that many licenses so far, though. British Touring Car, I think they brought, and WEC, I guess, kind of unofficially they brought. It's not
IndyCar as well.
No, they had IndyCar before that, because I was doing IndyCar data for them from our USF 2000 cars in 2016. So they already had an IndyCar deal. Motorsport Games didn't pick them up until, what, 2020?
I want to say end of 2019 into 2020, maybe.
There's 21 that we got the official IndyCar.
Oh, there you go.
But they already had a deal with IndyCar because they were doing the USF 2000 cars officially. And then the next year, the Tatis cars came out, and they had the official Pro Mazda and USF cars.
That's true.
2017 also.
Yeah, that is true.
That's, I mean, they didn't bring that. They had Formula E back in, what, 2016, 17? They did that $1 million shootout. So I feel like the only licenses that MSG has actually brought so far is British Touring Car and then sort of kind of WEC.
Since we're talking about the IndyCar license in particular, if we can, since we are running a bit short on time, a transition into the next topic that we wanted to talk about. The news right after Christmas broke from iRacing that they were no longer going to have access to the IndyCar license, and a bunch of things that were tied to that were going to be going away. For instance, an official Indy 500, the name of the IndyCar series, any of the tracks that are technically owned by the IndyCar series as well, were going to be leaving the IndyCar calendar. I don't remember what they're calling it now. It's just the US Open Wheel Series B, isn't it? Something along those lines?
Correct. US Open Wheel B or C, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And they, iRacing at the time cited IndyCar's agreement with Motorsport Games with their new game as the reason that this was happening.
So let me cut you off there with this.
Please
this
do.
Was that?
Please do.
I was going to say, I'm kind of frown on iRacing on this particular aspect of it, because they've known about this for how long? The exclusivity, that is?
Mm-hmm. Number of years.
And they've chosen until literally the week leading up to the new year to tell everybody this is what's going
to
happen.
They chose to do that because they were still trying to get a deal.
Correct. I can say that.
Yeah, they were still trying to get
a deal. If that is the case, still wouldn't it come up to your customer base saying, like, this is what's happening, this is what we're fighting for, be prepared for, as opposed to just dropping it on them like a ton of bricks and be like, oh, sorry.
I would worry that in the case of contract negotiations, that whether they would actually be able to comment on that kind of thing.
Yes.
It would be able to NDAs.
It also adds another gog to the fire that is the public opinion of motorsport games.
Now, this is where I'll defend them, because I actually...
Yeah, like, we did go down this rabbit hole together. Yeah.
This, it isn't on MSG, this, because as we mentioned earlier, upon digging, the contract that Motorsport Games has with IndyCar appears to suggest that it is not exclusive and that IndyCar is then free to negotiate deals with whomever they want.
Yes.
However, it seems, and I and a lot of people are now putting the blame more on IndyCar, that they are refusing to negotiate with anybody else.
Yeah.
Interesting.
This is one of the added benefits of Motorsport Games being a publicly traded company. These type of agreements have to be public.
Which would explain why I saw that there's actually no exclusive contract for...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways. Yeah.
So, in this contract, IndyCar have the ability to let their content be displayed on other games. But for whatever reason, IndyCar has chosen to go the exclusivity route, which I can understand why you would do that. I just don't think it's a good decision.
I was going to say, it sounds exactly the same as what the ACO and the WEC have done with R Factor 2. It's not that they hold, or the game holds the exclusivity, it's that they're choosing to exclusively let them use it.
Yes.
So
is that avoid confusion in the community kind of thing?
It does, like, confuse a lot of people, because everybody's under the impression.
Yeah. And a lot of us in the sim racing world, if you're of a certain age, grew up with Porsche being exclusively in the Need for Speed games because they and EA had an exclusive license. So we're used to the idea of games having exclusive license and car companies and games having exclusive agreements and other things along those lines.
But then now we've obviously gotten used to the fact that car companies like Porsche and other entities within sim racing have embraced the idea that more representation for their brand is better, and that means being in as many different titles as possible, doing different things.
Yes.
So the fact that IndyCar seems to, it's been a huge thing within the IndyCar community that to improve the marketing of the series and improve popularity, to get they want a standalone racing game for a mass market. And I completely understand that. And when they announced that we were getting one, widely celebrated, included by myself, because that would be a fantastic thing to happen. However, now considering that IndyCar's primary sim racing presence over the last 10 years has been through iRacing, and when you think of how much iRacing and IndyCar worked together during the COVID lockdowns, it seems a bit backstabby, maybe, for IndyCar to now go this route and not allow IndyCars to be raced or streamed officially at any track that IndyCar currently races at that's on the service. You know, there's no more officially
that's the other
special event.
That's aspect of this whole deal that was that you're literally not allowed to stream anything that includes the Dallara 12 chassis.
Yeah, and that's where it differs from, say, as we were talking earlier with the Le Mans license, where you can still do it in leagues and, but you just can't call it Le Mans. With IndyCar, you can't even host an event with those cars on that track. You can't stream it. You know, you can do the AI racing. You can do it behind closed doors in a private league that nobody sees the light of day of. You can't stream it. And that's a huge thing for league racing.
I was going to say, I'm going to throw this to Taylor because I know he probably has a comment about this.
Yeah, so I actually had the privilege of talking to one of the biggest quote-unquote IndyCar iRacing leagues on the service, the Lionheart IndyCar Series with George or Lorenzo and his organization, because that series, along with RaceBot TV, pretty much brought the top premier open-wheel drivers onto the service to compete against. I mean, you had professional IndyCar drivers, you had professional sports car drivers racing in that series, and it was broadcasted. It was a popular series up until the, you know, time that, unfortunately, come January 1st of this year, where no longer we could stream those events. And it affected it deeply to where, you know, they are still going to continue racing this series, but unfortunately, like you said, it's going to be behind closed doors to where no one will get to see the broadcasted events anymore. And it really has made an effect on the community. I mean, if I remember correctly, when that announcement was made in December, it was actually IndyCar was trending in the top 20 on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much of an impact of this situation is. And even some top drivers from both NASCAR and IndyCar were making comments. They were, you know, kind of middle bit of mixed bag of some saying, you know, it's unfortunate what's happening with the deal with IndyCar and iRacing, but they're looking forward to the game, which is expected. But also,
I was going to say, that just sounds like it's toeing the party line.
Yeah, it's just right on that line where people are being neutral on the senses of regarding this deal that IndyCar and Motorsports Games has. And unfortunately, like we pointed out with the deal with Porsche wanting to expand their brand to many different platforms, could this hurt or hinder or help improve IndyCar's platform to be a growing market brand now in the world of American motorsports and globally?
The fair point to make.
Is some of the backlash from all this just because it's something they had that's been taken away? Whereas, like, F1, there's never been an F1 official anything except the game itself, right? So, but that's never been a huge deal, even though it's a way bigger brand.
Correct.
But so is it just because it's something that you had and was taken away, and that's why there's so much backlash now? Because, like, we have a few guys that run the IndyCar thing, but I don't follow it as closely as I should. But I just remember seeing that, like, oh, someone didn't pay attention to Porsche a few years ago. And, you know, that's where I was at with it.
Yeah,
I think we just beat a dead horse there.
All I can say is I have a feeling iRacing and IndyCar are still going to be negotiating some stuff up until the season opener. So
I don't think they're going to stop negotiating until it finally becomes and either don't do this anymore, stop pursuing it, or we won and we can race IndyCars again.
Yeah.
And sadly, you're not going to hear anything about it until that's actually one of those two things happens.
I'm going to actually suggest something that you probably never really hear that often. IndyCar should take a page out of NASCAR's book. I know that's an interesting sentence, but hear me out. NASCAR has worked out a deal with both iRacing and now Motorsport Games, where you have the simulation partner in iRacing and you have the mass market partnership with Motorsport Games, where you can effectively hit both ends of the sim racing community, hit the hardcore guys, the e-NASCAR guys, and make little Timmy happy because he gets to drive as his favorite driver on his couch on Saturday morning.
Well, honestly, that kind of thing. That's what pretty much I have to say like this, but you see it with NASCAR, you now see it with the World of Outlaws doing it. I mean, a lot of these World Motorsports series should be taking notes of what NASCAR and the World of Outlaws are doing. I mean, it's a great opportunity. Yes, I get it. Everyone has their different point of views of the hardcore sim racers, like you pointed out, Ben, but also those who are just the average gamer who, like you said, wants to drive as their favorite race car driver at their favorite racetracks. And that's completely acceptable. It's just all about trying to find that balance to make sure both parties are happy. And all of these world championship series and national championship series have the ability to do that. I think it's just certain people are not wanting to follow the steps of like what NASCAR has done or the World of Outlaws have done.
Yeah, sadly, I think they're going to have to learn the hard way. Like so many of us have to.
Exactly.
If anyone's going to fail at marketing, it's going to be IndyCar.
That's very
true.
It'd
be the first one I'd pick.
Yep.
Well, they just got a new marketing manager as well, so I wonder if a lot of this has to do with that particular individual putting their foot down. And
I think it's more likely that this is all in the wake of the previous one.
Yeah.
At least it very well could be that as well. But.
You got to remember, all this was signed years ago, at least 2 years ago.
This is true. Yeah. Anyway, in the dying moments of tonight's program, Jordan, you have had gotten your hands on the new Thrustmaster DD wheel, and my beard is safe.
yeah, by the skin of your, well, beard, really.
Yes, what are your thoughts, and how jealous am I of you?
We briefly spoke in the Christmas show because we were in that intermediary period where I was waiting for the wheel to arrive and reviews had started coming in, and the reviews seemed overwhelmingly positive, which is very rare for any sim racing peripheral.
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, the show went out on the 21st and I got the wheel on the 23rd. So terrible timing, but also traditional.
It's just like all the sim racing news that we cover. Yeah. We air the show and it comes out right when we air it.
Yeah. However, the wait was more than worth it. It's phenomenal. now, obviously, I've got the caveat being that this is the first time I've used a direct drive wheel, let alone owned one. So I can't really compare the experience to any other direct drive wheel. However, from the point of view of just driving with a direct drive wheel, it's... I liked my old TSPC racer, you know, that gave me plenty enough response and feedback. You know, I was perfectly happy. I could have carried on using that for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. Now that I've got a direct drive wheel, I feel the same way that I did when I upgraded from my G920 to the TSPC racer. It's now a case of how did I ever do this without this? The easiest way to describe it feels like driving a car,
mm-hmm.
which sounds kind of obvious, but it's ridiculous how you know, you hear the buzzwords like you can feel every bump in the road. You can.
You can run over a coin and tell if it's heads or tails.
Yes, there, absolutely.
That's what I'm looking for.
In terms of like the usual, you know, new peripheral stuff, it's made very well. Like the quality of it's very good. It's incredibly small compared to, you know, belt driven wheels that I've had in the past. That fact still I haven't gotten over. It's just. Like, literally, the only negative things I can think about it is that the force feedback kill switch is behind, you'd have to reach over the wheel rim to get to it, which doesn't seem very well thought through.
You had to smash your wrist in order to reach it.
I can see where that would be problematic.
It's actually built into it, like, it's
on the base. Yeah, rather than having a separate kill switch, like you see with others, that you usually put them down by your feet or something, it's actually on the wheelbase. Which is it's a nice feature to have. It just seems like it's not the best positioning.
Yeah, break your ribs in the process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ribs, wrist, arm,
and on that subject,
your jaw.
On that subject, you know, another one of the huge things that they were marketing, and I thought it was just marketing spiel, was this unfiltered experience thing that they were talking about. And now a lot of people who have had direct drive wheels have said, well, sometimes you need filters to be able to get a better experience out of a direct drive wheel. There isn't just marketing spiel. The way that they explained it is that they chose 10 newton meter output because that was the limit that they could have without having to go for heavier components. Because they've gone for lighter components, you've got less weight to shift around, including what the motor is doing in response. So, you know, you're not having to worry about the weight of the components. You're just getting the motor response. And it is so responsive. Again, I can't compare it to anything else, but other people who have used this wheel and have used other direct drive wheels of a similar output range have said that this feels very detailed, responsive. It just it's so quick.
More organic?
Yeah, I would say so. And from someone like me who nearly managed to injure themselves on my old wheel, which was less than half of the newton meter output to this, it's kind of scary. but it's just, yeah, it was so worth the wait. I still think that really the way they priced it, it lends itself more to being a very good deal if you're already within the Thrustmaster ecosystem. Like, I've got Thrustmaster everything, multiple wheel rims, the SF1000 wheel. Like, I'm invested in that ecosystem. So it made sense for me as a belt-driven wheel person who was looking to upgrade to get this, because it's very well priced in that regard if you only are getting the base. However, if you're trying to get a whole setup of things, including wheels and pedals, etc., it's in the price range with all of those things as a lot of different competitors, such as Moser and Fanatec. So whether it's a good deal in that regard is basically down to subjective opinion as to what brand you like, what ecosystem you have, and what you're looking for. But if you're like me and you had Thrustmaster everything and you were wanting the next step, it's such a good deal and it's so good.
Smaller components is it's interesting for me because, like, we've had, you know, the VRS wheel here, we've had SimuCube, and they're all 20 newton meters, but no car are we using 20 newton meters. Like, that will just kill you for no reason.
Yeah.
You know,
that's an argument we've been having on the show for a long time, is that, yeah, sure, that those numbers are huge. And, like, but when are you really going to use them? And, like, what would be, we've tried in the past to see if we can work out what the conversion would be to newton meter output for actual racing cars. And realistically, with power steering on so many racing cars these days, say for stuff like IndyCar, you know, you're never going to need that level. And also, once you're fighting that level of output, you're then numbing yourself to be able to feel the things that you're trying to feel through having a wheel that's more responsive like this. So 10 feels great to me.
even without power steering, high downforce cars, like, I'll drive prototype 2, prototype 1 cars in SECA, the wheels aren't as heavy as a 20 newton meter sim wheel.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even close. And this is, you know, we're making a couple thousand pounds of downforce in these cars, doing about $160 into turn 10. You know, like, it's no joke. So,
well, Derek, I never really understood why. Go ahead, Matt. Sorry, finish your point.
I was just going to say, I never understood why everyone felt compelled, because everyone came out with the same Midge motor that was 20 newton meters for the most part. And I never got why, personally. So when I saw that 10, the 10 newton, I was like, someone's finally getting it.
Yeah, and I think that's why we've seen so many, like, with the prices of DDs coming down, we've seen so many companies targeting that 5 to 11, 12-ish newton meter range, because that's just a level that's going to be accessible for people in terms of their wallet, but it's also going to give them a very good driving experience, because, again, unless you're doing an 100-meter force feedback challenge on YouTube, what are you going to use that power for? You're just not, unless you're, like, desperate to get out of work, so you're gonna break your wrist.
I don't know. I've sprained my wrist on a belt driven.
Yeah, same, exactly. It's
actually the same wheel that you had, actually, Jordan. But yeah, to carry on with what Matt was saying, I can only compare it to a kart, which admittedly can have a very heavy steering wheel, and I don't think it's anywhere near as much as what he's saying with his prototypes, because I've never driven a high downforce car. By the way, Matt, you need to help me out there. But for a cartwheel, I think it's maybe closer to around 7 or 8 newton meters, somewhere around there. So
surprisingly heavy. It also depends
on the setup too. So
it does, but it's really weird because, like, the downforce cars, I feel it a lot in my forearms and a little bit my wrist, but the cart, it's entirely in my hands. I don't know why. I can't tell you the science behind it. That's just what I've noticed.
It's the way that you drive. It's like, for instance, when you see a lot of the top-level kart racers, the national level, which Taylor can attest to this, you watch them where their hand positions are, it's on the underside of the wheel.
Correct.
They're never on the side or on top like everybody seems to think it is. The underside literally makes you have to use entirely your fingers, hands, and wrists, as opposed to if you had it on the side or on top, you're literally using your forearms and your arms and shoulders and biceps, effectively. So that was one thing that I was beat over my head very early on, is to put your hands down below, because then it teaches you the finesse of the wheel and literally use your fingers more than anything.
I guess that's why I'm trashing a cart.
As great as this conversation is, gentlemen, I'm afraid we do need to wrap up tonight's program.
I just got here.
I know. Well, blame your computer for that.
No, I am going to blame my computer. I'm going to.
We are running over on time at this point. So thank you all for listening to tonight's program. Thank you all for our lovely guests for coming on tonight's show. Thank you,
and thank you, Jordan, for everything you've contributed to the show.
Yes, I was about to say thank you, Lewis's Computer, for fine cooperating, and Jordan, thank you for being a good friend and a great co-host for your time here at the Simcast. We will miss you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, hello 2023 and goodbye, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
But no, as I said on Christmas, you know, it's been an absolute pleasure being on, and I like you're about to say there, I'm sure I'll be back for something. Yeah. At least Christmas.
Yeah, I gotta get my annual beat down from you every year.
If it's like Christmas 2021, we need you to come on and do answer questions in random voices.
No.
Anyway.
Come on, Jordan, you could be Kermit, I'll be Fozzie.
Maybe.
That got him enticed.
Anyway, from all of us here at the Simcast, thank you all for listening. Matt, and I believe Dawn from
Gaming Athlete.
We'll be back next week for another round of Sim Racing News and general tomfoolery. Thank you all for listening. Lewis, final thought?
One last time for Jordan. Hashtag eat more tacos.
You're going to keep saying that when Jordan's here. Anyway.
I'm not, but it's going to be the last time Jordan's going to be here to hear it.
Yes. Stay safe out there, and bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production. For more, subscribe to the Simcast wherever you get your podcasts.